Buenos noches.
Well, I guess it depends on when you're listening to this.
Well, I'm just talking to anybody that's
Buenos
listening
dias.
To it. Wow. Yeah, yeah, there you go. Just like get the whole thing. Jared, you know the other one.
Buonasera.
Buenas tardes.
Good night.
Buenas tardes.
Oh, buenas tardes.
Doesn't that mean good afternoon?
Late. Good late.
Good late. Party.
Buenos deportes.
It's gonna be afternoon, evening.
Happy
sports, amigos.
Happy deportation.
No.
Yeah, so this is episode 76 of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Yeah.
My name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And like we always say at the beginning of this podcast, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us reviews on iTunes.
Yeah.
Some people left us some nice reviews, so we appreciate that, you guys.
Yeah, and we'd love to hear what you think. If it's awesome.
Yeah. You know, 3 stars and up.
How about 5 stars and up?
We're all 5 stars right now, so yeah. We like that. You check out our Facebook, bigplanetcomics.com/Facebook.
We had some amazing pictures.
No, that's definitely not what it is.
I was like, is Facebook a subsidiary of Big Planet Comics?
We're working on it.
Yeah,
yeah, we had some good pictures of cute puppies this week. Worth following us on Facebook.
Is anybody posting on Tumblr?
No.
Yeah.
Jared is
posting all the time.
Are you? Check out our Tumblr.
And if I see something awesome, it'll be on there. Like the BKV new comic. I put up a post about that.
Oh, the Brian K. Vaughan Marcos Martin comic.
Yeah, so I'm like, good. I'll find things and be like, this is cool, and I'll send it to Kevin or Jared, but I'll never post it.
And check out our Twitter.
Yes, please.
What's going on Twitter, Jared?
We got a nice little interaction from the guy who did, oh man, which comic did we do?
Hair Shirt.
No, Amala's
Blade.
Amala's Blade, who called us out for mispronouncing his name, because apparently he's Greek.
Yeah.
So we had a long discussion about
that wasn't
how
me.
Nick had not been the one reading the name properly.
Terrible.
But yeah, apparently he lives in Athens and told Nick's sister to come meet him at the comic book show.
So what have you guys been doing? What's been going on?
You know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Yeah, we took a week off because of what I've been doing. But we'll talk about that in the news section because it's actually news.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Started tutoring someone in English, which is really difficult because English is a terrible language.
Wait, what language do they speak?
Russian. Yeah.
Oh, you should get an ex-girlfriend to help them. Yeah. It's her job.
It was really weird. I know. Yeah, Nick should be like sliding me some Russian vocabulary.
Yeah, I know like all the curse words.
Do you?
That's the first thing anybody learns.
Yeah. That's the valuable stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I need
it's
to get
worth
around.
A lot of money. A lot of rupees.
Rubles.
There's one that's almost There's a good one that's almost a curse word. It's bleen. It's
bling? Like
no,
I got
bleen.
A lot of bling.
Bleen? You mean the PlayStation emulator for PC from the 90s?
I think you're not. All right.
It's basically like crap.
Clearly translation.
It's like
special.
Crap, but like the actual word means like, it's like, means like pancake. Basically, you yell it out when you're making like
a
like,
pancake
or like a crepe, and then you mess it up. And the first one's always like the worst. So you're always like, oh, bleen.
So it's like crepes.
Yeah. You're like crepes.
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 Yeah. Well, you should have saved that for the news section as well.
It's true. It's important.
It is important.
My brother had an amazing one. He learned this from the Guarani language of the Andes in South America.
Dude. Is that what Odorous Maximus speaks?
Is your brother Donald Duck?
No, he should be, though. He's traveling all over the place. But yeah, he learned that Jari is like what they say down there. And that's like, oh, man, or whoa, dude. But it means grandma.
Grandma?
Yeah, it's like, grandma, dude. And so like all the people who actually speak Guarani are like, what are these dumb kids all yelling at each other about grandma for?
Harsh toke, grandma.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, cool. Well, that's
news.
That's what we've
We're
been
actively
doing.
Weird.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's do some news. Let's do this.
This just in, DC published digital comics based on 1966 Batman.
Yeah, it's a big news week, you guys. I actually thought this was pretty cool, though.
That's pretty awesome. It's going to be written by Jeff Parker and Jonathan Case.
Yeah, Jonathan Case is the guy that did the art for The Creep, which is so...
Oh, wow. That's
and
awesome.
Green River Killer, right?
Yeah.
No, and, that's so
great.
Cool.
And the covers by Mike Allred look
that's pretty
great.
Rad.
So what is the 1966 Batman, like the TV show?
Yeah, the TV show. Yeah.
They're doing comics based on the TV show.
Yeah. So breaking news, DC's putting out a comic that's going to be fun.
And
also to basically annihilate like 20 years of trying to get journalists to stop saying Biff Bam Pow in their headlines.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ruined.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On the opposite side.
In the news, Biff Bam Pow, DC to publish digital comics based on 1966 Batman. Comics aren't for kids anymore.
Or they are.
Yeah, they are.
They're definitely not for people working at DC.
Yes.
So the next thing in the news is that Andy Diggle announced that he's leaving Action Comics before the first issue has even come out.
Yeah, so he only did one issue. I thought he did two. But
no, he did one and he plotted the rest out. And Tony Daniel is going to take over writing the rest of it.
Yep. Sweet.
And then he's leaving after that storyline as well because he's doing something else. So, yeah.
Wow.
So this is going to be the weirdest run on Action Comics. One issue and then the other issue written by somebody else. And then eventually somebody else is going to be writing Action Comics.
Yeah. So Tony Daniel was already the artist on the Diggle run, right? But now he's going to be writing it. So
He was writing Dark Knight? What was he?
He wrote Batman.
He wrote stuff from time to time.
During the battle for the cowl.
Sweet.
And also on the same day, Joshua Hill Fielkov announced that he's leaving both Green Lantern books that he was writing, which is Red Lanterns and Green Lantern Core.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And the reason for that?
Well, there was somebody said that he disagreed with them their plans to kill off Jon Stewart. Like,
yeah.
Editorial was like, you have to kill him.
So I saw it in a few different places, like Bleeding Cool had it.
Right.
And then Comic Book Resources independently confirmed that Joshua Fiakoff's resignation from his Green Lantern title was due in large part to an editorial edict to kill off Jon Stewart.
But then later DC was like, no, we weren't going to do that. But I don't know if I believe that.
I don't know if I believe that either. So
it could have been just like, hey, what do you think about doing? You know, who knows?
All he's like, I'm out of here.
But I mean, from what it sounded like, it's all rumor, I guess. You know, DC had no comment on this. But
here's the thing, though: all of these writers through the last year or two, leaving books suddenly, is definitely
bad track record.
Seems to be proof that the editorial is doing something wrong.
And I was talking to Andy about this. People may remember Andy from being on the podcast before, but
hey guys,
and we were talking about the fact that I think Jon Stewart is like, I mean, DC would never admit it, but I think more people know Jon Stewart as Green Lantern than how they know how Jordan.
I mean, he was the Green Lantern on the cartoon.
Oh, yeah, true. Well, all the people who saw the Green Lantern movie and then tried to forget it, that kind of erased that.
Well, I remember when the movie came out, a lot of people were like, why did they make Green Lantern white?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Like a lot of people grew up with those Justice League cartoons.
That's a good point.
And were really into them, and, you know, that's what they know. And they were good.
Yeah.
They were really good. So
also, a plan to kill off Jon Stewart seems wrong, especially since they're trying to be more diverse these days.
Oh, they're saying they're trying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got one more piece of news, and this is what I've been doing. So Small Press Expo,
the best comic show
2013 SPX expands in response to exhibitor demand
or something like that.
Yeah. So I'm the I run the exhibitor part of Small Press Expo, and basically we put our tables on sale, and our server crashed.
Yeah.
And so
much like Comixology.
Yeah, much like a lot of places these days when
they're
trying
to popularness.
Yeah, yeah. So it's good. It means that a lot of people are trying to get on at once. But then we had a whole big thing where we were trying to get people to be able to get in and pay for their tables and stuff like that.
Right.
And the show, we sold a lot of tables. And so to accommodate everybody, and because so many people wanted to get in, we made the room a lot bigger.
Oh, so you oversold, like even more people wanted. Wow, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was like good and bad at the same time. But it's been crazy. So that's what I've been doing.
So how much bigger is it now?
I don't know if we've officially announced how much bigger it is yet.
It's bigger.
I don't want to talk too much out of turn. But yeah, we basically have the whole. It's 1/4 bigger than it was before. So it's gonna be pretty big.
Amazing.
Yeah,
that's great. Sweet.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna get in trouble for talking about this stuff.
No, but nobody from SPX listens to this.
It's true. Nobody listens to this. Just in general.
Yeah.
Except for all the people leaving us reviews on iTunes. Thanks, you guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
So that's it for the news this week.
Cool.
Yeah. It's. I feel like all our news is like DC did something dumb, but then DC is also doing a Batman book.
That's true.
Yeah, I hope it has King Tut in it. Yeah. All right, so you guys.
Oh, wait, I got one. Oh. So Awesome Con is for local folks. A new convention is going to be in DC in April 20th and 21st. We're going to be there.
We're going to be there.
That's yep, true. Yep. One of the first.
That's not really news.
We're going to podcast live from Awesome Con.
No, we're not.
I just made that
up. But you can show up and demand to hear the podcast.
We're going to talk to Lou Ferrigno.
Is he there?
I don't know. Probably.
We're going to talk to Ernie Hudson.
Is definitely
creator of the Hudson River.
Yeah. He's named after it.
He is. He's named after the river from the Sailor Tween book that we talked about.
That's true.
Eagle-eared listeners may remember. So that'll be fun. When is that again?
20th and 21st, Saturday, Sunday in April.
Sunday. Yeah, and I think we'll all be there at various times. So if you listen to the podcast, come by, make us feel like we're famous.
Yeah, just stand there all day and eventually see all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We will give signatures.
just stand there. Yeah, we don't even know what we're going to be doing. Hopefully we'll have some like cool mini comics and stuff, and we'll try to have different stuff than what other places
have. We'll bring the big planet.
Yeah. So that's it for news. You guys want to get into some viewer mail?
Yes.
Why not?
Let's do it. All right, first up, we got a couple questions from Facebook. Jared's got those up on his phone right now. He figured out how to do it. So
yeah, I'm a little slow. but yeah, so you guys got questions, Facebook us, tweet us, whatever you got. This one's from a longtime questioner, Dave Rockwell. He said, what you fellas think of this story? And there's a convenient link, which is that Grant Morrison has promised a completely new, that's the quote part, Wonder Woman. Apparently he's taken over, and he has been going back and reading a whole bunch of Wonder Woman stuff and like trying to figure out how to make it, you know, like reading all these like feminist things and stuff and like trying to figure out Wonder Woman stuff. And then he also said he kind of threw all that all out the window as doing like an awesome Wonder Woman.
So it's not clear exactly what it is, but
I'm
assuming it's going to be like a Wonder Woman Earth 1.
Wait, so is this going to, is he taking over the Wonder Woman series?
That's
he's not writing
a project or a graphic novel.
He said he's done with monthly titles, so he's going to be doing.
Okay, that's good, because that's like a really good series.
Yeah, no, I think he's doing like, it's probably going to be Earth 1, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about any, you know, Grant Morrison, especially a standalone thing.
Where he can kind of like tell a story that doesn't have to be worked into another universe, or just he can do what he wants.
I feel like I've enjoyed the stuff that Grant Morrison has done just in the regular universe, but I also feel like it's led to a lot of problems.
Right.
Final Crisis was a huge mess.
Yeah. How much was him versus all the other stuff?
Basically, it's like they edit everybody else and they don't edit Grant Morrison.
Oh, I see.
So I feel like there were problems with that. Like there were Orion died in like three different ways. Yeah. And, you know, that whole countdown to Final Crisis, he didn't even know anything that was happening in that. And none of it was written towards what he was writing. And then with his Action Comics as well, he was writing these stories about Superman, you know, when he first became Superman, and at the same time George Perez was writing something that took place 5 years later, but Perez didn't know any of the stuff that Morrison was writing and had to rewrite a bunch of his stories and stuff because they didn't fit together. So I feel like Morrison probably works best just sort of on his own.
Right.
And I mean,
was this like All-Star Superman?
And is it Adam Hughes doing the art on this? Not said yet?
I think so. Also, related news, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Here's some more stuff you might be interested in, Dave Rockwell.
Marvel is also starting to do a series of graphic novels again, like original graphic novels, like
just standalone things.
Oh, like Super Boxers and Star Slammers,
like those great ones from back in the day.
I love those.
I've been actually
Kill Raven,
really wanting them to Kill do Raven's that again because they don't do it too often. And the first one in it is like Warren Ellis and Mike McCone doing an Avengers End of the World comic or something.
Ready.
It's great. Yeah, it sounds great. Yeah, so that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, I hope that answers your question, Dave Rockwell. Jared, you have another question from Facebook as well, don't you?
I do. This is from a longtime other questioner, Matt Dambisky.
I think it's pronounced Dambikey.
Dambikey.
Yeah, Matt Dambikey.
Dambikey. He said, question for our podcast hosts. If you weren't working in the comics field, what do you think you would be doing?
Working at a bookstore.
according to my high school like career placement test, I would be a mortician.
Really?
Is that true?
Yeah. It was like
people who died without you being involved.
I can't remember if it was mortician, if it was more specific. It was like,
what's more specific?
Like hearse driver or something. Like that. It was something related to embalming bodies. I was like, what? What kind of high school career? Like, what am I supposed to do with that? Like,
it's a job. People
go to mortician college.
Yeah, watch 6 feet Under over and over and get prepared.
Yeah, like, 6 feet you.
Yeah.
Wow.
What would you be doing, Jared?
Crying. I have no idea.
Probably
something terrible.
I took one of those military tests in high school.
Wow.
And they wanted me to be a doctor in the army, and I was like, I don't want to be a doctor.
Field doctor.
You wanted to carry the guns. You're like, I'm fighting back.
We'll do that Florence Nightingale business.
Amputating arms and stuff.
battlefield surgeon just running around with a hacksaw.
I'd probably be like in a punk band sleeping on people's couches and making like $30 a day.
You do that already.
I would do that for a, I'm doing air quotes now, living.
Living.
Yeah. I'd be a professional homeless.
I'd probably be the same, but in like Greece.
I worked in a paper warehouse before I worked here. So
nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I worked at a terrible computer company. So I'd probably be doing something like that and crying.
Yeah. I was basically Daryl from The Office. Yeah. So, yeah, Matt, what would you be doing if you weren't doing comics? Well, I think Matt has another job.
Yeah, yeah, that doesn't count, though.
Yeah. Here's the secret that nobody knows. People that write comics, most of them don't get to do it for a living.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's unfortunate, but it's true. All right. So thanks for the questions, Matt and Dave. We got another couple questions, though. This is from a fellow named Eli.
We know him.
Do we?
He has stopped by the DC store.
Well, hey, Eli, he has three questions. The first one is very passive aggressive. He says, did you switch to a biweekly podcast format? we didn't. I think
we actually answered this in person.
Yeah. Well, we didn't plan on missing last week, but that whole SPX thing kind of was dominating my life and I wasn't able to be here. And I'm the one that knows how to record the podcast and do all that stuff.
Yeah. And like we were kind of lazy.
So yeah, it happens.
The answer is we're mostly weekly.
Yeah, yes. And we should be back on a regular schedule now. So,
but yeah, send us complaints so you don't hear from us.
Yeah, yeah, we love to hear your complaints. And he's got another question. Question two, this is a really easy one. Die Hard or Predator?
Oh, is that really easy?
Yeah, it's Die Hard is the answer.
Nick's thinking to go Predator.
Boo.
I forgot. That Static? Was one of my, yeah, that's that was one of my sound effects.
Yeah, probably Die Hard.
Yeah. Definitely
Die Hard.
Yeah, it's Die Hard. The answer is Die Hard.
It's true.
There's only one answer to that question. What about you, Eli? Is it Die Hard or Predator? I feel like he must struggle with it. If
the real question,
or maybe
is,
he's testing us.
The real question is Die Hard 2 or Predator 2?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that's the real question. Predator.
Predator 2.
Die Hard 2. Predator 2 is so bad. Die Hard 2 is bad and great too though.
It's yeah. Predator 2's got those amazing Jamaicans.
Oh, like throwing the bones and stuff, like
doing voodoo and stuff.
Do you remember when movies used to have like flaming barrels and alleys all the time?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, those were the good ones.
Those were the good ones.
That was the '80s.
And yeah, but then Die Hard 2 has like people getting stabbed through the eyes with icicles. It's directed by Rennie Harlan.
Who's
easily the greatest director of all time. He directed
name some of his other oeuvre.
Well, Long Kiss Goodnight.
All right.
Yeah. He directed Pirates. What is it called?
Pirates, the pornographic film.
Cutthroat Island.
He did Cutthroat Island.
Same thing.
Yeah. And and Die Hard 2.
And he did other stuff.
Yeah, he's done other stuff. I think he did that really bad Exorcist movie that came out a few years ago.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so
Exorcist the prequel or whatever.
Exorcist Resurrection, The Awakening.
The Possession.
Yeah. Yeah, so Die Hard is the answer. And Die Hard 2 is the answer. Okay, so Aliens versus Predator versus Die Hard 3. I think Die Hard 3.
Wait, is Die Hard 3 the Lethal Weapon rewritten one?
Yeah, with Samuel Jackson. Yeah.
Oof. Well, Aliens 3?
Yeah, Aliens 3 versus Predator 3?
No, Alien versus Predator is the third Predator.
Oh, Alien versus Predator. Oh, God.
Oh, I thought you were doing Aliens versus Predator.
Oh, no. No, that's not like a three-way question.
Aliens versus Predators versus
Oh, because there's also Predators.
Yeah.
Oh,
I never actually saw that.
You didn't see that? It had
Adrian Tomine.
That'd be amazing.
Adrian Tomine.
I don't want to be here.
Adrian Tomine wrote the script to Predators. You guys didn't know that? No, it has Adrian Brody in it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it.
I see that and you didn't see that?
I don't know. I was going through a rough time.
When Predators came out.
Couldn't handle it.
Because Predators came out. Yeah. Going through a rough time.
That was fun.
And then he's got a third question. He says, I just read that 1993 was the biggest year for comic sales ever. That was two decades ago.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Yeah, it's got an exclamation point. What are your thoughts on how the industry has changed over the past 20 years? Well, that's a big question. What has been the most significant change? That's a big word. And what's better and what's worse? Let's start at the end with everything is better and then go from there.
I would not say everything is better.
Yeah, everything's better.
Most things are better.
Because when did all the distributors explode?
Oh, see, that would be a question for you because I was not part of the
industry. I think it was right around then. That was part of the big crash out, I believe, of all these actual competitive distributors got too heavily on board with the variant cover market, and they all flamed out.
Sounds like things are better now than that, right?
No, because now there's only one distributor, and so it has no competition. So we can't say, oh, wow, you're out of, say, East of West number one. I'll go to this other distributor because there are no other
distributors. It's true, yeah. They can just do a bad job, and it doesn't matter. Not naming any names.
Nope. But they're doing
it. Diamond.
Pretty good job.
Diamond. Yeah. Very good. I think it's better overall.
Yes.
Right now, there's in the last, 10-15 years, there's been more of a focus on writing and actually making comics good.
Yeah.
Which I think is, wasn't really too much of a thing in the back in the days.
Yeah, I do feel like from the writing side of things, like back then, there was this big explosion of stuff like Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen.
Which
and,
was 10 years before that. So
It was like 88, right?
86?
Yeah. Maybe it was 86. But so and then I feel like in the early 90s, and there was like a big black and white explosion with stuff like
Cerberus and Turtles,
Usagi Yojimbo, Flaming Carrot, all that stuff. And I felt like in the early 90s, it was a lot of the old guard of guys sort of trying to figure that stuff out, like how to do that, as well as a bunch of young guys kind of doing this other image thing that they were a lot of artists trying to write comics. And a lot of it was kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And I feel like now, you get a lot of the guys that grew up reading that stuff, writing comics, and I think that that really makes a big difference. Like
these
guys,
the generation
like,
grew up on the quality.
Yeah, so the guys
stuff.
Like the guys like Jason Aaron and Ed Brubaker and you know all these guys. Not that those are even like the young generation now,
but
Brian K. Vaughan and Nathan Edmondson and all these guys.
Oh, so on.
Yeah, and so on and so forth. I think that's been a big difference, and I really think a huge thing has been trade paperbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think not everything used to come out in trades.
No, nothing.
And just
really.
The fact that there's a term called graphic novels, which most people on the street honestly thinks means something different than comic books.
That's true.
You know, that's like, oh, I don't read comic books, but I read graphic novels. I hear that a lot.
That's really weird.
Yeah, and it's not just like graphic novels like, oh, that one Will Eisner graphic novel from the 70s. It's, you know, tons of stuff. Also, you know, it's not great for us, but digital comics is a pretty big thing.
True.
Yep.
And... it's, you know, it's good and bad, but it's nice that people can get access to this stuff. Not everybody lives by a comic store. So.
And also like, the fact that there's so much stuff out of print. I think if digital stuff starts moving in that direction, I think it'll be even better.
Also, along with the digital, I feel like indie comics have kind of gotten bigger because they can reach more people now with the internet. So
that's a good point. Or just like
a lot of people are just
like,
making money just on, you know, putting their comics online.
Yeah, the online generation who have never really published comics.
Like, and then those people eventually start. He worked for like, you know, big companies and make money. So
yeah, like the Oatmeal and PvP, like all these people just like they're famous on the internet, like famous, not like comic book world famous. Yeah. So
it's cool.
They're actually famous.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So a lot of ways. So the most significant change, what do we think? Just the quality of the writing?
I think the best thing has been our podcast.
Yeah, and our podcast. Our podcast has been really big. It's been really important for the comics industry.
Yeah.
We're in our 20th year now.
Is it coming up on almost 2 years soonish?
Of the podcast? Yeah, I think we started June 2 years ago.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Just Nick and I in a six-pack talking about the new 52
six
solicits.
12-pack. Jesus.
Yeah, it might have been a 12-pack. The end of that if you guys ever want to listen to the end of that podcast.
Podcast number one, folks.
It's messy.
Well, I had a six-pack.
Nick had a six-pack, yeah. It was hidden under his stomach.
It's somewhere in there.
All right, so thanks for the questions, Eli. Eli says best from Eli. So best back to you.
Wait, didn't he have more?
No, that was everything.
Right,
oh, no, he's, yeah, he says sorry.
Some nice stuff.
Sorry, he says also, he said some nice stuff, not just did you switch to a bi-weekly podcast format. He says also thanks for putting on the podcast. It's entertaining.
Welcome.
The recommendations are great. And it's a neat way to make buying comics a more communal experience.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Thanks, Eli.
Yeah, that's what we try to do. Not to
get everyone onto the commune.
Not to toot our own horn, but yeah, it's fun. All right, so we got a bunch of books to review this week. You guys want to do that?
A bunch of books.
Let's do it.
We love comics; they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
All right, up first this week, we've got a book that got pushed to the side a couple weeks in a row because it's really long and I didn't get a chance to finish.
At this point, like 4 weeks ago?
4 weeks ago, yeah. But anyway, who cares? This is called District 14, Season 1 Hardcover. This is a new book by Humanoids, a European publisher. This was written by Pierre Gabou, or just Gabus, I don't even know.
Hard to tell.
I always try to overpronounce French stuff.
Rutiman?
Yeah, sure.
Is the artist?
There we go.
Rutiman?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway,
Jared French.
Jared, you just reread this because you read it for the first time 4 weeks ago. So why don't you tell people what it's about?
Impossible. So basically, there's a vaguely New York-y city, like big metropolis type thing.
Like New York in like the 30s.
In the 30s, but it seems that in this world, there's crazy technology like dirigibles and like weird elevators and machinery and stuff. Plus there's been at some point an aliens have crash landed. So there are aliens running around. Plus nearly every animal in the world has learned to become like more human-like and have given up their like wild ways and started wearing clothes and moved into the city. And then there's like gangsters and corrupt politicians and superheroes and supervillains and conspiracies. And yeah. So the main thing is an elephant guy who shows up on an Ellis Island type immigration point where he has just come from the old world and you're not real sure why he's there. But his name's Michael, or takes the name Michael as his pseudonym, and quickly runs into
a reporter.
A reporter. A beaver.
Yeah, a beaver named Hector.
Hector is kind of the perfect conniving, you know, like always out to get the story.
Yeah, he's
like
a little fast talking, little beaver guy. And they kind of quickly become they kind of witness too much almost immediately.
Almost instantly, like a gangland like evil like hit that they take pictures of. And
they find like two people having like a secret meeting, and they're taking pictures of them, and then they get caught, and there's like a
shootout. And,
and they very quickly become targets of the mafia, or you know, just the underworld in general,
who are connected to the politicians of the city. And
and as that happens, and basically from there it just builds, and building on top of that.
More and more characters are introduced, and they meet more people who are all slowly tied in,
and it has sort of it has supernatural elements. There's like a psychic is a part of it, and who helps Hector contact his dead wife. There's also like a superhero character that shows up at one point.
Tiger Man.
And there's also like a character that has sort of telekinetic powers.
Yep.
And then the aliens kind of have their own powers, but it's kind of a hard book. It's definitely something you have to see. And as always, we're going to put pictures up on the webpage.
It's like a hard boiled adventure mystery, but a lot of really good character development and like character moments.
It's mostly a noir kind of story.
Yeah, very like
you know, corrupt politicians and mobsters. Mixed in with all this crazy goings on.
Yeah, but it's also almost noir. It's like, it's noir if it was drawn by like a cross between Walt Kelly and Will Eisner or something like
that. Right.
It's got a very,
like those weird tadpole dudes.
Yeah. Oh, right. It's got a very cartoony style, but then like it's, you know, it takes a lot of influence, I'd say, from like film noir stuff. Yeah. But then some of the city stuff is like, it almost reminds me of like that Batman cartoon or something like that. Or
one of my favorite things about
retro but futuristic
was designs of like some of these cities and buildings. Like one of the building like Michael lives in is like this, you know, like I don't know, 100 story, but like a really tall like skyscraper. But
it's basically the Tower of Babel.
Yeah,
and most people can only get there through like dirigibles and like
climbing up the outside or
going to a building across the street and taking a shuttle from there.
Cable car across, or like,
and it's got like floors that are like, there's like a floor that's just like a garden, and it's full of like
animals who regress back
people,
to like
who regress and live in like this jungle and eat people, and it's crazy. There's so many crazy things in this.
It's full of insanity, and there's like amazing set action pieces and like a really good mysteries of like some stuff tied together. And I was just like trying to figure out what's going on. And
yeah, it says season one. This come out in like issues?
We were
talking about
that. It won the award at the Angoulême Festival in France for 2012 for best book. So maybe it's like an online thing or issues or something.
It's broken up into episodes inside of it. So.
And it feels like a TV show.
Yeah, it's like 300 pages. It's really...
Yeah, so basically it's like a book about animals, humans, and aliens living together in a retro-futuristic city. That feels a lot like The Wire.
Yeah.
but is so fantastical at the same time. And like The Wire, I mean, it really does feel like a lot like The Wire. It's strange. But so as the book... As it goes, it starts to get really confusing. I feel like not in a bad way. There's just so many characters being introduced, but then it kind of hits this crescendo where everything's been set up, and then it just moves.
Starts
and everything
knocking
starts,
the pieces down.
And you see how everything is connected, and it just works really well. And because they're doing so much at once, it makes this whole city, just District 14, I think is what the city's called, right? It just makes it feel very alive.
Yeah,
and you know Also adding to that, like the panels are very dense. I feel like there's always a ton of stuff going on in the background.
Yeah, it took me like 3 hours to read this.
Yeah, it's a long book, which is, you know, that's a long time for a comic book. But it's just great. It's not like anything I've ever read before.
Yeah, and there's like flashbacks, and they build up the backstory for a lot of the characters. And
I think the thing that'll get the most comparisons to is Black Sad, because it's like a noirish anthropomorphic thing.
Yeah.
But it's also not anything like Black Sad.
Yeah, no.
It's great. It's definitely not as like romantic as Black Sad. I feel like that's very much based more noir than this is. This is this is very much a thing of its own.
This is like controlled chaos. It's amazing.
Yeah, and it's great. It's one of the best things I've read this year.
Yeah, easily, I agree.
By far. Yeah. And like I said, the art is dense, but the story is very. There's so much going on in the story.
Yeah, there's so much going on, but I feel like there's definitely a solid, like, kind of one big story that kind of ends at the end of the first season.
Yeah,
like, it never, still, like, some dangling plots.
Oh, there's a lot dangling, but, like, you
it never feels
satisfaction
directionless. Like, it's always, even if you don't realize it at the time, like, you're reading something, you're like, what is this? What is happening? But then you realize later, oh, well, this was actually really
especially
important.
Rereading it, I was like, oh, my God, this is the first time this happens, or this guy shows up, and
it's great. Yeah, it's a great book. Fantastic.
Highest recommendation.
Indeed. all right, so up next, we've got another graphic novel. This is Black Paths. This is a new hardcover by David Bay. This has been out in England for a while, but is finally making it over to the States.
It came out in French maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but... yeah, this is another self-made hero book, right?
Yeah,
or and just blowing up the graphic novels.
Yeah, self-made hero,
Britain.
Doing good stuff. And this is another book that's, if I was going to compare this to any other book that I've read, I would probably compare it to District 14.
Yeah.
So this is about, what is the name of the city that this takes place in?
Like Fiume?
Yeah, Fiume. And in this book, Fiume is a city that after World War One declared independence.
It's like an island.
It's like on the coast of Italy or Yugoslavia or somewhere down there.
Yeah.
I don't know if it may, but...
Yeah. Anyway, so they declare independence from Italy and just Europe in general and become their own nation that's run by this crazy poet.
Yeah, basically this insane poet guy like takes a bunch of his like, you know, ex-military guys from the war and march into the city and take it over and basically make it into an anarchist poetic republic of insanity.
Yeah. But then they get caught up in, like, the politics of it all. And...
But
D'Annunzio is the guy's name.
D'Annunzio is the poet guy. Oh,
and
so good.
So that's kind of the setting. And he's also a character in this book.
Very much.
But it
character is right.
Yeah, he's definitely a character. Yeah, he's insane. He's almost like a Kim Jong-il type where he's just like...
He's like Kim Jong-il if he was, like, trying to lead his life based on, like, I don't know...
Well, he's a Dadaist, right?
Yeah.
So it's like he's basically like nothing matters, but everything matters. Right. It's absolutely insane. But
like, for example, one of his things is like I've written to all of the people, like all the local cities and countries to send me their most insane patients from the asylums because they give us the best ideas and we will follow them. It's like
He's very similar to the guy from what was that book called? Jihad that we read recently.
Oh,
the insane leader in that. But so that's
Background.
Yeah, that's background to kind of this story of this this former soldier who's become kind of a tough or gangster in this city. And this
he's suffering from like post-traumatic.
There's a lot of PTSD
disorder.
Going on.
Yeah. He's sort of seeing dead people from the war and in particular a friend of his that died.
Yeah.
And he falls in love with this lounge singer.
Yep.
And who is almost like a Helen of Troy type figure in this city. It's people fighting over her all the time.
The city is like constantly full of brawling and like killing and just insanity. But like, everywhere she goes, people start to fall in love with her or fight over her.
Yeah. So their love story is kind of a big part of this. And then the story of finding out about him and these other soldiers that they're now gangsters together, finding out what they did in the war is another big part of this. It's such a crazy story. I find it a little hard to explain everything happens.
There's a lot of characters that their storylines are all interwoven. It's like,
and it all culminates in like this big parade for like the dead and like everything. It's like a parade with like 10 different meanings. Like for some people, it's like the end of their, kind of that period of time where like
they're putting the war to rest or their friends to rest and, or it's like the city's
going back to Italy and then
but then it's also a cover for like a heist and an escape thing
and assassination plots and
it's if it seems it's I imagine this is really hard for people to follow what we're saying about this book, but I think it's a book that you kind of need to read. David Bay, I mean, I guess some people would have seen his stuff before. How
biggest thing would be Epileptic.
Yeah, Epileptic. And Little Pirate King as well was pretty big, I guess. Yeah. But he has a very, I don't even want to say a cartoony style, but, you know, he's very European. I think Tardi is probably a pretty big influence on him. Yeah. And,
I'd say almost surrealist. I don't know. I'm probably using the wrong art term for it. But, like, I don't know.
Yeah, everything can be looks like
weird.
Yeah, yeah. So sometimes things are pretty straightforward, but then sometimes when people are talking about their moods or how they feel about things, like the art can kind of take on this dreamlike. Yeah.
Feel Debbie Bate loves dreams. He's done a lot of comics about dreams too, so that very heavy influence on his art.
Yeah, something that we talked about that with his Middle East book that he put out about the history of Middle East relations and how
best
there were
of
lot,
enemies.
Yeah, how there were a lot of scenes like that in there too, but. Yeah, I don't know. I'm having a hard time explaining what's going on in this book, but it's
I'm just
going to
say that there's a hilarious heist of a statue that...
Oh, that's one of the best scenes.
Is taken out of a building in the most hilarious manner.
Yeah.
It's just great.
The book itself is almost Dadaist, but it comes together. It's amazing. Like, yeah. I love this comic.
Yeah, it's really good. Me too. Yep.
Oh, my God.
Again, our highest recommendation.
Yep. Yes.
All right, up next, we've got BPRD Vampire.
What a switch.
Yeah, very basic comic. This is written by Mike Mignola, and usually we don't talk about BPRD just because it's been coming out for so long, but we wanted to talk about this because it's got art by Gabriel Bond, Fabio Moon, who, of course, worked on what?
Day Tripper, Casanova.
Yep, those are the two big ones.
Other stuff.
Yeah, so I don't know. There's not actually a lot to say about this book.
This one's pretty simple. It's another one set back in the early days of the Hellboy series, so it's during or right after World War II. When the BPRD is kind of getting set up, Bureau.
Hellboy's still a little kid.
A little kid, yeah. So, right, I guess after World War II. And the main character is...
Yeah, it's 1948, just...
Oh, there you go, 1948. I don't remember exactly. Basically, he has a vampire problem, and this entire first issue is basically I need to find out about those vampires and go kill them.
Yeah, basically, some vampires are around, and they're killing people, and then people find out, and then they're like, we're going to go kill these vampires, and then that's the end of the issue.
Yeah, yeah, like, the main character has some weird thing happen to him in the past where, like, he's got the souls of vampires trapped inside of his body, and they're, like, speaking to him, and
like
he's starting to lose control, so he's like, only way I can regain control is by killing all the vampires, and that's basically it. It's a very straightforward, short.
Yeah, it's just all set up basically.
But it's good and it looks good.
Yeah. No, it does. Yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, it's Gabriel Bond, Fabio Moon that got us really excited about this. And their art's great. The way they render the vampires is really creepy awesome. And it's well colored and it's nice and it looks cool. Yeah.
This is again obviously a BPRD miniseries, so as a whole, it's gonna be amazing.
All right, up next we've got Constantine number one. This is we talked about how Hellblazer ended.
Yep.
And how they're rolling Constantine into the regular DC universe. And they kind of started that with Justice League Dark. And Jeff Lemire has been writing that. And now this is spinning out of that.
Or they started with Brightest Day.
Oh, it did start with Brightest Day. Oh, boy. Remember Fat Chaz, Skinny Chaz? That was So this is written by Jeff Lemire and co-written by Ray Fox, who's been kind of like... around DC recently.
He's been co-writing Justice League Dark.
Yeah, he's been doing that, and he wrote a few issues of Batgirl and some other stuff. And this is art by Renato Guedes, who's just drawn a ton of stuff for DC.
His art is great in this.
Yeah, it is good. But this is Constantine.
All right, so John Constantine wakes up in the DC universe. He's like, what happened to my... I can't swear anymore. But no.
Can he smoke?
It starts off pretty straightforward. He's in New York City. He's been there for a little while. And this guy shows up and he's like, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it. He's like, some crazy magic stuff is happening. And Constantine's like, show me what it is. And then there's people looking for this artifact and this guy shows him where it is. And then the sorcerer shows up and they fight.
He's like, about it. Hey, I'm John Constantine. Do you have a magical quest I could start a comic book series on? He's like, yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
perhaps a group of cultists would try to kill us.
So yeah, that is basically it. Like,
hey, I'm a comic book writer.
Yeah. So we were talking about how this is, it's like, this is not bad, but it's like, it's exactly what you would expect it to be.
Yeah.
They dump you right in. It's just like, Here's like a magic quest for you to go on.
The quest is pretty interesting. You know, he's like, I got to find these four artifacts that connect me to the source of magic.
Yeah, it's a fetch quest.
Yeah. but it's got some cool things here and there. Like, there's some cool uses of magic.
Yeah.
Like, he's assaulted by, like, a spy on, like, an airplane. And he like, kills her in, like, a weirdest, like, magic way.
Yeah.
And he still feels like the Constantine from Hellblazer. He's a little slightly toned down. He's a little less cursy.
He's
not as gruff.
I'd say a little less cynical.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a little more optimistic, but
he has a little less personality.
No, yeah, he's
toned down. Yeah, just toned down a little. Because he's still
a jerk.
Rough.
And
yeah,
he does something really terrible in this
issue.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I'd say just toned down a little bit. I think it's a good, you know, merged with the more DC tone.
It's the Constantine of Justice League Dark. If you like that, you'll like this.
Yeah.
But did you like this?
Yeah.
I did.
No,
you didn't?
I just thought it was okay.
No, I liked it.
Yeah, I didn't love it.
But it didn't do much for me.
It was good.
It was basically like, hey, John Constantine, there are four apples located around this map. Go find them. And then bring them back so we can make an apple pie.
No, I thought
it was basically like playing Cooking Mama.
Right.
No, I liked it. I thought it was a good
No, it wasn't bad. I'm
good
sorry.
Bad
I'm just,
guys.
I'm being a jerk. Yeah. I just, I don't know. Anyway. All right, so up next we have a book that is fantastic. This is East of West, number one. This is by Jonathan Hickman and Nick Dragota.
Gee whiz.
We don't actually have a copy of this here because we sold out really
everywhere.
Fast.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah, like a lot of the new Image number one books, people went crazy for this. But, yeah, let's see. What is East of West number
one about?
All right,
East of West. Oof.
So basically, after the Civil War, let's start there. So basically, after the Civil War, the nation broke up into like
seven nations.
Yeah, seven nations, and at the same time, there was this new religion that kind of popped up. Called The Message, and there was a Native American shaman and then this preacher guy who were both sort of
had
these visions that kind of combined together. And so after that, the world became kind of stayed in like a Wild West state for like a really long time. And then much later, I don't have the issue here with me right now, so I can't be like too specific. Basically, much later, another guy had another vision that unified these together and basically foretold of...
Wouldn't that be Mao Zedong?
Oh, yeah, it was Mao Zedong. It was. Had another vision that unified all these together into sort of a prophecy about the end of the world and the four horsemen of the apocalypse coming. And basically, this is a story about three of those four horsemen being reborn while one of them is sort of on a tear. And
they're trying to kill him.
But this all takes place in like a futuristic world, basically, where there are these they're
robotic horses.
You can't tell if they're like aliens or mutants or
people. Yeah. Like spirits and stuff like that. And it's great.
It's crazy.
It's like so much less sci-fi.
There's so much world building in this that like...
I'm actually happy with that description I gave. There was like a lot of stuff going on there.
I feel like there's a little too much world building.
You think?
No, I felt like there was so much information that by the end I was like my brain was about to explode.
I felt like at the beginning there were like two pages that were a little too much exposition. Where they're basically explaining what I just explained.
Yeah.
But I thought the issue itself like just does a really good job of telling this story, you know, like you know who a lot of these characters are already by the first issue.
Right.
So there is a lot of setting up the world, but I think
there's just a little bit of like, by the end I was like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Like, no, I think a lot of that I was like,
I get like a little bit of it, but I'm like,
right. No, I think that was it. There'd be like, who are these new characters? And like a page later, I would just be like, cool, who are these new characters? Like I'm ready to follow them. And then it switched to somebody else.
Wasn't that very similar to the way Saga started it?
Right. No, I'm not complaining. I think that was great. He would draw me in every time.
I feel
time
it was a little less focused. Like, I feel like there was like a lot of like, just like scenes, like something like, here's something crazy. Here's another thing that's crazy. And here's another thing that's crazy. They all kind of fit together, but it was like, I felt like it was just a little too much like...
I feel like this was a setup issue where...
I loved it.
Yeah,
I'm just saying this is a
setup issue where instead of it being like, oh, in issue two we'll see something crazy, it's like, here's the setup, and there's like so much going on, you can't wait for issue two instead of needing issue two to get your money's worth.
I felt like everything that was happening was sort of serving the story that they were setting up, though. I don't know. I didn't feel like I was reading stuff that just didn't have anything to do with anything.
Right.
It just felt it was a little unfocused. I really liked it. I mean, I loved it.
I loved
it. Just like,
I feel like they were definitely doing a lot. It's a long issue too, isn't it? It definitely seemed like it was longer than 23 pages. I'm pretty sure it was kind of long, but should say Nick Dragota's art in this
incredible
is great,
so good.
Just from a guy that used to basically be like a Mike Allred stand-in,
right.
To sort of what he is now. And he's just fantastic. Yeah. I think his stuff.
The characters are so stylized, but like they got so much, just amazing. I can't describe. They're great.
And the three kid,
the horsemen
are great. Yeah. They're so funny and evil. They're just like pure evil.
They play so well off of each other. Or together, I guess.
Yeah, they're great. And yeah, I don't know. This was like one of my favorite first issues in a while, actually.
Yeah, the tone of this reminded me a lot of Stephen King's Dark Tower series. It's like weird fantasy sci-fi mashup of craziness.
No, it's great. I really liked it. Yeah.
Go buy it. Oh, wait.
I feel like I need to read more.
Yeah.
That's definitely a thing that happened. I was like, I need to read more of this. I don't know what's going on exactly. I need to find out.
I want to read more. I tend to like Jonathan Hickman, but I feel like sometimes I don't like him as much as everybody else does.
Yeah.
And but that's not the case with this. I love this. I think it's the best thing he's ever done.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I thought it was great. That's East to West, our highest recommendation. Lots of highest recommendations this
week. Good week.
Sure. All right. Up next, I don't think I'll be able to talk about this one because I read it and then it was sold out immediately. This is Five Ghosts, The Haunting of Fabian Gray, number one. This is by Frank J. Barbieri and art by Chris Mooneyham. Yeah. Two relatively new guys from what I know. And I thought this was a cool first issue. I mean, I can kind of talk about what happened, but I think Jared will do a little bit better.
Well, I could do the high concept of it. So basically, the Fabian Gray character is the main dude who's kind of like a...
Indiana Jones meets Ben 10.
Thank you. Yeah. I was like, meets Ben 10. But the gimmick high concept for this is that he is basically being sort of cursed, possessed, infused with the power of five legendary characters, not like real people, but you get...
I guess they're real people in this world.
Are they? I don't know if they explain that.
But anyway, you get
like Sherlock Holmes, Merlin the Magician, or a wizard, you know, Gandalf dude.
It's Merlin.
An awesome samurai type, like, I don't know, whoever.
Rashomon.
Yeah, Rashomon or one of the other ones.
I'm just naming samurai related things.
Man, who am I forgetting? He's got two more.
You're like katana.
Katanas.
Yeah. Rashomon.
Usagi Yojimbo.
He's my favorite.
The Magnificent Seven. Wait a second.
Oh, God. Who am I forgetting?
The Magnificent
Seven. Dracula?
Dracula, yep.
And
Robin Hood.
And Robin Hood, of course. So,
I think that was six, but I don't know.
That's whatever. Six or seven.
Two Draculas.
Or 14.
Two Draculas.
A few extra Magnificents. But yeah, so this is basically he can draw on their powers to either detect stuff or suddenly grow claws and like shoot amazingly. So he's basically like the ultimate adventure dude with superpowers.
Yeah, and I guess his wife died or was dragged into the underworld, right? Yeah.
Yes. And, so there's a very active supernatural element. And he and his old good buddy, who was like he and this guy and his wife were like the trio.
Basically,
back
what's
in the
name
day.
Of the other dude in Indiana Jones? Like his.
Mutt.
No.
Oh my gosh.
John Rhys Davies.
No, not that guy. The other
Sala.
One.
Oh, Ray Winstone.
Solomon? Is that his name? No.
Sala.
Ray Winstone?
No, his.
Sala. Yeah.
Sala? You're not thinking about the guy who runs a museum?
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, the old guy. The old wise guy.
Yeah.
Is that the guy that, like, blinks and his eyes say, I love you?
Yeah.
So basically it's them. And
I say it's Brody. It's not Brody.
Adam Brody from the OC.
Yeah.
Adrian Brody.
Nailed it. Oh, no. Adrian Tomine. Anyway, this podcast. Well, no, we're only 47 minutes in.
I feel like
we've been here for hours. Basically him and this guy, they're going to go and try to find his wife.
Marcus?
With the... What are you...
Yeah, Marcus. That's it. Yeah, Marcus.
All okay. Right. Marcus.
Yeah. So they're going on an Indiana Jones type quest. They get chased by natives with spears.
Yeah, it's basically exactly Indiana Jones.
Yeah, they're looking for some treasure. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so they're going to go into the underworld and try to find his wife, right?
Yep. They're on a quest to figure out how to bring her back. So for years they've been searching for this, and apparently that Fabian is able to at least not age as well, or at least his powers might be doing that, and his friend's getting older, so...
Yeah, and it's cool. It's I think it's really well written. There's a lot of stuff set up. It's funny as well, which is great. The art in it's very cool. It's I would say like almost like Frank Avia, but by way of like Klaus Janson or old Frank Miller or something like that.
Yeah.
Like it's very moody, but then it's got something about the way that it's inked is it has like a very 80s feel to it, but not in a bad way.
Yeah.
Like it looks very cool. Everything's very angular. It actually reminds me a lot of Hugo Pratt in places too.
It definitely reminds me of Hugo Pratt. Yeah.
I thought it was really well done. It was a great first issue. Unfortunately, you can't buy it anywhere because it sold out really fast.
But there's a second printing coming out.
Yeah, there's a second printing coming out, and I would highly recommend it. That's Five Ghosts, The Haunting of Fabian Gray.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we just got a few more things, you guys. Well, maybe we got a bunch more. Hold on. All right, up next, we've got, we'll probably just talk about this for a second. We got Green Hornet number one. This is by Mark Waid and Daniel, with art by Daniel Indro. Yep. this is pretty basic
this
stuff.
This is a Green Hornet comic.
This is another pseudo relaunch where it's trying to start up a new storyline with some early looks at him.
But then the other Green Lantern series, Green Hornet series, is still going, right?
Yes, yeah, but
it's becoming Green Lantern. Green Hornet. God. Green Hornet
Green
Legacy.
Arrow Legacy.
It's Green Hornet and New Guardians, right? So it's really weird because the two series are, I guess, different versions of Green Hornet, even though they're both like regular versions of Green Hornet.
Confusing.
Yeah, so basically, the big thing with this one is that
Wade is writing it?
Yeah, that Mark Waid is writing it. That's the reason we're talking about it.
Yeah.
Because usually we would not talk about these kind of pulpy Dynamite books because they tend to be very similar to each other.
Yeah.
But I guess the kind of big thing that makes this story different is that the Green Hornet is posing as a criminal.
I think that's always been his thing.
Is that always the thing?
Yeah.
Well, then there's...
Yeah, that's always his thing. Yeah.
I thought maybe it was too. Okay, well, basically, the interesting thing that's going on in this comic is nothing.
Yeah, it's well written, I felt like it was exactly like any other Green Hornet thing I'd read. There's nothing completely different about it.
I guess it's different than the current one, because the current one kind of started off based on the Kevin Smith stuff, the original Kevin Smith script.
Yeah.
And this definitely seems to be maybe a slightly more classic approach.
Yeah.
It's weird. There's like...
it definitely takes place in like the 30s or 40s.
Yeah, I think it's like in the 40s. There's a framing device where the Green Hornet is obviously an old man, and he's like kind of remembering what's going on.
Yeah.
And then it just basically
goes...
Young
Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
Nice.
Like the guy in... Like the old man in Indiana Jones.
Here's the thing.
That's like telling you which Pepsi to drink.
If you've never read or seen any Green Hornet thing, this is the thing to read.
This is the best, apparently
I hadn't, so
this is the best Green Hornet comic I've ever read.
Yeah.
But it's not that good.
It's good. It's just that, you know.
Yeah, it's basically about him becoming the Green Hornet.
Setting up his scheming and
kind of how he works himself into the underworld, but also runs this newspaper at the same time, and how all those things work together to help him become like a pretty solid hero.
Yeah.
And
That's it.
That's about it.
Kato punches some dudes.
Yeah.
There you go.
There's like a cliffhanger that's not a cliffhanger at all. The governor gets arrested, so I don't know.
There you go. Spoiler.
That's about it. Yeah. All right. Up next, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy number 1. This is by Brian Michael Bendis and Steve McNiven. I think we talked about Guardians of the Galaxy 0.1.
Yeah, which was a completely different...
Which was a short prequel story about one of the main characters in this. And this is the series on full blast.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it was cool that there was this 0.1 issue.
Yeah.
It really like makes the main character more sympathetic than he would be if you just jumped in and read this book. But also just jumping in and reading this book is a lot of fun.
So Guardians of the Galaxy starts off with Peter Quill... It's Peter Quill, right?
Yeah, Peter Quill, Star-Lord.
Star-Lord. He's in a kind of like a space bar. He's hitting on a girl, and then the king of Spartax shows up, which is his dad.
Yeah,
his dad. If you read the 0.1 issue, he takes off at the end of it. He's like, I'm going to find my dad. And this is obviously like way later. And his dad's king. And he shows up and he's like, hey, don't go to Earth. All the aliens got together and they're like, nobody can go to Earth because we want Earth to evolve on its own and we don't want to interfere. And obviously Peter Quill's like, you know, F that, I'm going to go see what's going on. And so he goes to Earth and obviously stuff goes bad instantly. We're also at the same time introduced
a crew.
Tony Stark flying through space, and he's like, why haven't I gone into space more often? He's like, I have this space suit, I could just do whatever I want and like get rich. And then Rocket Raccoon shows up and starts blowing things up.
Groot. And actually I thought the most interesting character that was in this was Gamora.
She's awesome.
Yeah, who's like
deadly assassin.
Yeah, she's just like she's basically the most badass woman in the universe.
Yes.
And she's written as such. I feel like it's cool. The writing in this was pretty solid. I don't know. It was. I thought the first issue or the 0.1 issue was a lot better. There's a little bit of like people just saying exposition-y things in this.
Cool stuff.
Yeah, like. Or like trying to be super cool, but
I thought the action sequence was really good.
Yeah, so
really
the art is really great and everything is laid out really well. It's just like people saying things like, "Hey, Tony Stark, if that's you, I like the new look."
Tony
Stark, what are you doing out here all by yourself?
Right.
I'm like, really, is that what's happening?
Where are the Avengers?
Where are the Avengers? I heard your monthly title is very good. The action's all really well done. Steve McNiven is obviously a very cool artist. And I'm glad they put him on this book because It's the kind of book that needs, you know, to be crazy and feel big.
Yeah, right.
Because it's all in outer space. And it's got Rocket Raccoon in it and Groot, who's a tree.
It's crotacking good.
Oh, yeah. So there's that, too. I guess they have their version of fracking.
Of naughty words.
Yeah. And
I mean, not like swears.
Not fracking like yeah, yeah. Looking for like whatever coal or whatever.
Yeah. And then they're like, Tony Stark, we will never be able to use this water again. yeah, but no, they have their own version of the word fracking.
Krotak.
Krotak. But yeah. Anyway, that's the worst thing about this book. Krotaking. All right, yeah, but no, it was good. It's, yeah, that's basically the verdict, right? This remains good.
Really,
it's great.
Really fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun and fun to read. All right, so up next we've got Time Warp number 1. This is another...
Let's do the Time Warp.
Mm-hmm. That Time Warp.
Yeah. That cost us $5,000. yeah, so this is another anthology from DC in the vein of, what were the
from
other
Vertigo.
Ones? Or from Vertigo, in the vein of like The Unexpected, Mystery in Space,
Ghosts.
Yeah.
And one other one. But
yeah, so this
one is time travel.
This is very time travel themed, yeah. And this has a bunch of people in it. I would say the standouts are probably Damon Lindelof and Jeff Lemire do a story together. Gail Simone does a story with this amazing artist, Gail Bertrand. There's a Matt Kent story in here as well.
Yep.
And a bunch of other stuff. We'll have the full credits on the webpage. But did any of these stories kind of jump out at you guys?
The Tom King, Tom Fowler one was pretty amazing.
Oh yeah, that was great. It had such a great twist.
Yeah, there's one where you're literally just following a timeline of different history and trying to figure out what is going on. And I can't. It's a perfect like Twilight Zone type thing, which is amazing.
Yeah. So all these kind of have that O. Henry Twilight Zone Saki kind of like the twist at the end of the story thing. So it's kind of hard to talk too much about them. But I really enjoyed the Damon Lindelof Jeff Lemire story.
Yeah, I was going to say like that a lot.
But also has an ending like that as well.
Yeah.
I like that it's a Vertigo Comics Rip Hunter comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rip Hunter's, you know, usually in the DC universe.
What's his name? Time Traveler?
Time Master.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And he says all sorts of crazy curses a lot in this.
He does.
At himself from different timelines.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mentioned it, but the Gail Simone story. The art in that is great.
So good.
Yeah, the story is great, too.
It's almost like a Gail Bertrand. It's almost like a more cartoony version of Brandon Graham or something like that. Like, maybe with a little Dan Hip thrown in.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought that one was really cool.
I'll tell about that one a little bit because it's really cool. It's like a guy who has like these magic like candies. He runs a candy store and you can go in and like get specific memories or like relive moments or change things in history or time. It's like time travel through candy drugs or something.
It's great.
Yeah, it's great. And so all the stories are kind of high concept. You know, there are a couple that aren't as good as the rest.
Here's the one I didn't like at all. Was the Dead Boy Detectives one.
I skipped that one.
First
honestly.
Of all, it's part two from one of the other anthologies.
Yeah, I think the last one was in Ghosts, yeah.
And it also has nothing to do with time travel.
Yeah, it's weird that it's in here. I don't know if it's just because it's been in the others. And that's, you know, it's like a sellable property. Do they actually mention that on the cover that it's got a Dead Boy Detective story in it? Probably. But yeah, you know, it's based on a Neil Gaiman thing and has art by Mark Buckingham. It's not bad. It's just part two of two and has nothing to do with time travel.
But yeah, there's a cool sci-fi one and a bunch of battle suits. There's another
cool
sci-fi
one. I guess that one doesn't have anything to do with time travel either.
It sort of does.
The futuristic one where they're just like fighting
one-on-one. Yeah, there's another one where two soldiers from different nations are fighting out in a new alien battlefield.
Which is great.
Maybe they're from really different time nations.
It's true.
Like Sliders
from
White Castle. Yeah, but overall...
this one was really
good. Yeah, I thought that this was really solid. I felt like maybe the last one or the one before wasn't up to standard, but
yeah.
I thought this one was pretty good.
Yeah.
Cool. So that is Time Warp number one. All right, we just got two more books. First up... Extermination number 1 by David Lapham. Is it Lapham?
We never know.
I think we never know. And but he wrote Straight Bullets and what is that book called?
What is the crazy one with the football players in the mountains?
Oh, Spartan USA.
Spartan USA.
That was great. That comic was never collected.
We got to get the rights to that and publish it.
Yeah, it's a shame. And Young Liars, which is also cool. And art by David Lopez, who drew Mystic, of course, from the hugely successful CrossGen relaunch.
That's true. Yeah.
And has been drawing some X-Men stuff recently as well. Right. But yeah, so this is the beginning of a big crossover between Extreme X-Men, Astonishing X-Men, and Age of Apocalypse. And it's about the Age of Apocalypse.
So I read two of these books. I read Age of Apocalypse and Astonishing X-Men. And those seem to be the only two books that are really a part of this. Basically, Nightcrawler has been from Age of Apocalypse has been in our world for a while. He was in Uncanny X-Force, and he betrayed Wolverine, and Wolverine's trying to track him down.
Alternate universe character.
And so...
No, I can't explain
And so
this.
Nightcrawler, Nightcrawler and Beast find a way back to the Age of Apocalypse, and that's where we get introduced to all the Age of Apocalypse characters.
And stuff goes down.
Yeah, and then they... And then so, like, they're like, oh, we're back in the Age of Apocalypse, you know, Beast gets captured, and then the Astonishing X-Men follow them through the portal, and they're like, oh, we're here to take Nightcrawler down. And then out of nowhere, the Extreme X-Men show up, and they're like, you're messing with the... all this traveling through realities is messing up stuff. And then these giant monsters show up, and like, they start killing people.
Yep, that's everything that happens in Extermination number one.
That just reminded me of in Time Warp with that the dudes were like monitoring the timeline. That one was awesome. Anyway, keep going.
Yep. Yeah. The only thing I feel like if you read Age of Apocalypse, you should read this. But I don't know if any of the other people like. I guess if you read Astonishing X-Men, you should probably read it.
I think also if you read all of the Uncanny X-Force,
like
Remender.
Follow-up on that.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a follow-up on all that stuff.
Yeah. And, I it was good. I like David Lopez's art a lot as well.
Yeah.
He's kind of reminds me of these, like, Marcos Martin, Paulo Rivera type guys.
My only problem with it is that it has, like, such an interesting setup of them, like, going to the Age of Apocalypse to find Nightcrawler. And then the whole story becomes about these giant, like, anti-celestial beings that are trying to kill everybody, and then the rest of the stuff is just like forgotten. it takes on like
hey, we got you all back, let's do a new story.
It's like how Crisis on Infinite Earths is like about a bunch of stuff, and then it just ends up being about the anti-monitor.
Because
the beginning of this is cool. I think like the way that like Wolverine reacts to Nightcrawler,
talking
about that, like how he trusted him because he's, you know, he reminded him of the real Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
I think that stuff is cool and like the kind of stuff that makes X-Men good.
Yeah. Right.
And then, it turns into kind of something else.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was still all right.
It's good.
Still
I'll be curious.
Big event.
Yeah.
Fenty in the right way. So.
Yeah. So we'll see where it goes. All right. So we got one more book this week. We saved it for the end so we can all cry after the podcast goes over. This is called When David Lost His Voice. It's by Judith Vanna Stendel. I'm just going to pretend I said that right.
Yep.
And so this is basically. This was a rough book. It's basically about the. About this character named David and his immediate family, which is his daughter and his daughter's daughter, and then
his new wife oh, yeah.
and their daughter, mm-hmm. and about him contracting cancer and then going through that, and like how his family deals with it and how he deals with it, and it's like the saddest thing I've ever read.
It's really depressing.
It's really depressing, but it's
great.
But it's so well done, and it is depressing because you really feel the connection to these characters.
They're really good characters.
Yeah. So, I mean, how would you? It basically starts out with him finding out that he has a tumor on his larynx, and is it larynx or
larynx?
Larynx.
Is it
larynx?
On his throat. And then that he has throat cancer basically. And then he kind of goes into this world of his own, and he's having like that's a lot of this book is kind of like inside of his head and
or
like,
other people's heads, or imaginations and visions and dreams about what's happening to them and emotional states.
Yeah, and kind of how he deals with it. And then it switches to the story of his daughter and her having a daughter.
Yeah,
and
trying to raise her daughter by herself and like all this stuff. Ugh.
And then the stories sort of combine, and it just becomes about the whole family. And you kind of learn about their problems and things that they've gone through. But everything eventually sort of centers around the fact that he's dying of cancer. And it just kind of follows him through, you know, dealing with different stages of chemotherapy and kind of trying to live his life, but everything's kind of falling apart at the same time.
Yeah, and he's stubborn and he doesn't want help, but he, like, clearly needs it and he's deteriorating
and you know everybody else around him, their lives are kind of falling apart at the same time just because they're dealing with it, and it's sad. His relationship with his new daughter basically, I think her name's Tara, is really endearing and really heartwarming, and he's like such a good father, obviously.
She's like
Tamar is her name.
She's really young, so it's like you get like all the levels, like his new wife, his adult daughter, his like very young new daughter and like all these different reactions to how they're dealing with it and like how he has to act to like so they can handle it and how like he doesn't act the right way for right people all the time. And
And his like his granddaughter, for example, like when takes place over a few years, so when she's first born at the beginning of this book, but by the end she sort of recognizes him as her grandfather, and like that scene's like heartbreaking because it's like this little bit of joy for him inside of everything that's going on. In the end of this book is it's like it's brutal. So devastating, but it's so well done.
It's built up too perfectly. It's
it's so elegant and like
it's beautiful.
It's a really great book, and
once again highest recommendation.
Definitely. I mean, of course it's not gonna be for everybody. It's a really rough book, but I feel like ultimately it's not happy, but it is
kind of happy. I mean, these people have really good relationships with each other, and I don't know, there's a lot of happy scenes in it,
and it feels true. It's not like it's just know, emotionally manipulative or whatever. It's like, this is a good story.
They're not tugging at heartstrings. And some of the stuff, like the way that they deal with the younger kids, I think is really great, actually. And I think I can't say for certain, but I'd say for like maybe even for people that are going through stuff like this, it's kind of obviously a sad ending, but I feel like it could be a good thing for people to read. It's like kind of there's something kind of therapeutic
about. No, it's great.
It's a really great book. It's I would recommend it to anybody that thinks that they can handle a book like this. All right, well, that's it for this week's podcast.
That's it. Just all that.
Just all those gazillion things.
So many massive amazing books.
We read a lot of stuff. It was over 2 weeks, but no, for me it was all yesterday. But that's it. We'll see you guys next week.
See you.
See ya.